I've talked about how stories turn against us in other podcasts. And today on the Ask Dr. Gill show, I want to talk about the effects of shame on our health, because I think it's actually an important piece to how our bodies function. Today on the podcast, I want to talk about the hidden weight of shame and how we carry that in our bodies and in the stories that we tell ourselves. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman. And today on the podcast, I want to talk about how shame affects us, because it's not just an emotion, but it can affect us physiologically in our body. And for those of you who are new to the topic of shame, Brené Brown's work is instrumental in understanding how shame and is psychologically and how we move through the life, you know, our lives with it. But today I want to talk more about our health and navigating through the medical system, talking to doctors, because I think that there is shame that lingers related to health. For example, people who are overweight, there's a lot of shame associated with that, or stuff with just having a chronic illness, often there is shame around that. And I will talk a little bit about how we blame ourselves about this as well. But I think today I'm focusing more on the aspects specifically with shame. And shame is different from guilt. And I want to make this distinction this way, is that when you do something wrong and say, I'm sorry, I didn't do that right, or I should have done X, whatever it is, that is not shame. That is guilt. That is remorse. That is showing concern about something that happened. Shame is saying, I am wrong. I am bad. And I think that distinction is important, because I don't think we talk about that enough. And clearly, to say, and just think about this for a minute, just hear the words for a minute. When you say, I did something wrong, or versus I am bad or I am wrong, notice, like, if you say that out loud to yourself, notice how that experience feels in your body. Because they probably are going to be different. And none of us are perfect. We're going to make mistakes in life. And whether it's a business deal or you forget to bring the milk home for your spouse, whatever it is, things happen. And that's okay. I mean, that's the thing about it. But when you say, I am wrong, then there's a physiologic response, and your body starts to react to that in a way. And it may be simple, like you may notice it, your shoulders hunch, your breath gets shallower, maybe you lower your eyes. Whatever that is, that retraction that happens, there's something else going on in your body, because then there's a survival mechanism that's happening along with that. So your stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol may go up, for example, or your immune system may decrease function or over function, which is where you get the chronic inflammation happening. It can affect your digestion. It can interfere with your ability to rest, repair, and heal. Particularly if it's something where you're saying, I'm wrong, and you're holding on to that experience. And I suspect most people in Western society have elements of this in them that they're not conscious of. And I can pretty much guarantee you it's affecting your health. That's been my experience. And I think what's also interesting about this is it kind of can snowball in a sense. So you say you're wrong, that belief gets ingrained, and then it sort of snowballs, and that keeps happening. I remember having this conversation with somebody about surfing, simple example, and realizing I was having this day where I kept getting in people's way and was basically just getting out of their way at the last second. And it was like I spent the entire session being in the wrong spot. And I was like, oh, this is a belief system that I have. And it kind of, in this moment, like all of this happened at once, where I realized this was something from my childhood. And it was liberating, actually, for me. Because as soon as I kind of recognized it, I was like, oh, this doesn't have to be true. And since that experience, it's not that I don't get in people's way sometimes, because it happens. Just, you know, there's a lot of people in the lineup and there's just a lot of things happening, but not like it was happening before. Not like constant situations where I was basically in someone's way every time I was coming back out or had just missed a wave or something like that. It was a really interesting experience for me. And what was also interesting was how much more relaxed I felt after that in the lineup surfing. It's like I became a different surfer, because I would go for waves that other people might have tried to get on, even though I had the priority to get to there first. And I didn't even think about it. I just went. Whereas before, there was an aspect of it that was doubting. So this is an example of how our stories can shape our behavior. And it was probably affecting physiology as well. I don't have any data on that, though I suspect if I had been wearing a continuous glucose monitor, we would have seen higher levels show up as a result of this. Because cortisol, when you exercise, cortisol can spike if you're going too hard. And I think I mentioned this in a podcast about psychedelics, where when you exercise, you don't want to overdo it. You want to be in that 70 to 75% max heart rate. Because if you go too high for too long, that's when you start producing too much adrenaline, which stresses you out. Whereas if you stay lower, it's 23 minutes. I was fascinated by that. Anyway, getting back to shame. Shame also influences some of the choices we make, as I was alluded to with the surfing. The thing about it is that this could also lead to decisions that you are making in terms of your health. For example, maybe downplaying your symptoms and not getting medical help when you need to. For, you know, as a situation. And this I've seen over the years of practice, particularly as it relates to sexually transmitted infections, which are really, really common. But there's a lot of shame associated with them because of the stigma in our society, which just perpetuates the problem in a sense, because then people don't get treatment, they spread the condition. And this happens, by the way, with other conditions. It happens, people don't get treatment with obesity because they feel shamed about what's happening with them, or diabetes, or they reach for foods, or, you know, you might reach for something out of habit that you know isn't healthy for you, but you're just trying to eat your feelings. And sometimes people stay in situations that are super stressful because they feel shamed about this. There's been research, and I don't want to get too much into this, but there's been research around this with domestic situations and how people stay in relationships, even though they know the person isn't good for them, but there's a shame about admitting that there is a problem there. And I'll leave it at that. This becomes a much bigger topic, particularly as it relates to domestic violence and so forth. But there can be a shame component in those situations as well. Now, I want to just say that this is not about blame. And if you see this in yourself, just remember you didn't choose the situation. You didn't choose the shame. And it's interesting in some of my patients that I've talked to, it's almost like there's a shame aspect around how they were raised. And if for some reason there was something wrong with what they did as children that made their parents treat them so poorly. And as I say that, you may hear that and go, oh, that's ridiculous. But think about your own life and how often people or people you know or even you might say, well, I deserve to be spanked or whatever it is, something like that. Or, I was a difficult child and of course they yelled at me. Those are aspects that are blaming the person that might have been abused, which is a form of shame. And we do it so quickly. We do it so subtly. I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other end, I'm going to talk about what we can do to work with shame and what that might look like. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome back. This is Ask Dr. Gill podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Gil Winkleman. And before we continue our discussion on shame, I just want to remind you, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to send me an email or leave them below. The email is info@askdrgill.com. And the second part of the show, what I want to talk about is how do you deal with shame? Because it's so endemic, if you will, in many ways in our society. And just as an example, you know, I was having a conversation with someone recently about their success or lack thereof in their lives. And one of the really interesting things about success when I say success, I mean financial success for a minute. A lot of people in our society feel shame if they aren't as successful as their friends, their siblings, etc. And what's interesting is a lot of that is just timing. It has nothing to do with how talented someone is. And if you look at studies in terms of economic success, the year you graduate has almost as much of an impact on that as who the person is. So as an example, if you graduated in 2008 from college, your chance of success is much lower than someone who graduated in 1998 or even 2004 because of the crash and the economic climate and finding a job. And a lot of people didn't find jobs. And there's still a fallout from that. And same with the kids who graduated college during COVID, had a much harder time and are still having a struggle with that. And there's shame associated with that, which is why I bring that up, because I think that we blame ourselves for these situations as opposed to understanding that there's a greater gestalt, a greater wholeness, and a holistic thing that's going on in these situations, right? Forget about the measurement, right? I mean, your life and what it is that you are bringing to the planet is not a dollar amount. It's not something that you can measure in your bank account. But if you read sort of the newspaper and sort of mainstream, even non-mainstream stuff, really, like that's the thought process behind it. And I think that there's a lot of, even in like New Age literature, there's almost like this aspect of, well, if you're not manifesting what it is that you want, it's because there's something wrong with you. Like that's the undertone to some of these texts. And I would say that's not necessarily true. And so that's another aspect of the shame that can happen. So when you see this, what do you do about it? Well, one of the things that's curious about shame is it thrives being in the shadow, being in the shadows. What I mean by that is that if it's not named or unspoken, it gains more power. Just like if you berate it, it gains more power as well. And so the thing about shame, I think, is that if you can approach it with a gentle curiosity, the grip of that it has on you begins to loosen. And I didn't mention this in the psychedelic podcast, but one of the people that I talk to, and I know this is more, you know, there's more people, but there's one in particular I talk to that their trip helped them deal with their shame. It was like everything about it loosened and they gained a new perspective on their family as a result of their experience. It was kind of interesting. So oftentimes I say this because I think sometimes shame becomes part of our story and our identity of who we are. And so the ability to sort of look at it and go, oh, that's curious. And as it loosens, then there's an aspect of this that allows us to begin to see it, to see this whole situation in a different light. So when you feel it, when you notice that you want to hide, when you feel the feeling of you're not enough or you know, I'm bad, something to that effect, notice that. Notice the moment. Where do you feel it in your body? That would be the second thing I would say. Where do you feel it in your body? Name it. Name that experience of what it feels like and allow it to be there. Let it be there. Don't try and change it. Don't try and fix it. And just label it. This is shame. This is shame. You can do this with any emotion, by the way. And if any memories surface related to it, let those come up. You know, and like I did with the surfing and being in the lineup. I had memories from my childhood coming up where I was in the way, which that was kind of the sense. And you don't have to have the memories come up, by the way, You just have to feel it. The thing about this that's interesting is healing happens in the nervous system. It's not about insight. Insight can help, but healing happens in the nervous system. So it's about letting the nervous system happen. And one thing you can do, if it becomes overwhelming, well, one of two things you can do. Humming. Just humming. You want to feel the vibration in your throat. That actually stimulates the vagus nerve. And so that will calm your nervous system down. So that's one thing. The other thing is to basically going to have your thumbs out. You're going to bring your thumbs to the side so you see them peripherally. And using your peripheral vision. And by doing that, you're helping reduce your anxiety as well. So that's and then finally thank your body for showing you this. Because the more gratitude you have, the more you're going to transform that experience for one thing. But you're also going to encourage your body to release other things as well. And the other thing about it is, in the example I gave, which is kind of a relatively minor example, it was pretty profound that it happened that quickly. But remember that we're making micro changes. And oftentimes I would say that the micro changes are more powerful than the big macro events. And I think I didn't say this in the podcast about psychedelics, but I will say this now. I think that the changes that people have with the psychedelics is very profound. And they are usually big changes for people. And from what I understand talking to people, the more post-trip integration you do, the bigger the changes are. And the longer lasting they are. And I suspect that's because there's micro little shifts that happen as a result of the neuroplasticity from the medicine that are going on in the person. You don't have to do psychedelics to have that. This is your internal experience that you can have. And those micro changes are what allows that to happen. And that's what my workshop is about, is helping people gain the tools to get these micro changes that are going to allow them to carry forward to create new stories about their bodies and their lives that are transformative. And so the workshop, I'll leave a link below for you to sign up for the mailing list for when I get it out, you know, get it ready. I was looking at doing it in November. I don't know if that's going to happen, so it may not be until January, but we'll get it together. I'm hoping to do it live, online, and potentially in person in Hawaii. So it won't be a very long, the initial workshop won't be very long, maybe 2.5 hours. So that's kind of the plan. And I'll leave a link below, but if you're interested, you can also email me and I'll send you the link. And the email is info@askdrgill.com. And if you like the podcast, please leave a comment or give it a nice review. That helps to get listeners on here so I can continue creating the content for people. And I appreciate the emails that I've received from people. It's really awesome. So that's what I got for you today. I hope you have a great rest of your day. You take care.